I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Since announcing his presidential candidacy 3 weeks ago, Donald Trump has dominated the news with his incendiary comments about illegal immigrants, calling them rapists and criminals. His fellow Republican candidates are starting to speak out against him. Lindsey Graham said on CNN yesterday, Trump is a wrecking ball for the future of the Republican Party with the Hispanic community, and we need to push back. On Saturday in Phoenix, Arizona, Trump gave a long and rambling speech before an enthusiastic crowd, declaring the silent majority is back. He offered a deal to Mexico, who he claims is sending illegal immigrants to this country.
So I had an idea. I think it's good. Every time Mexico really intelligently sends people over, we charge Mexico $100,000 for every person they send over. Now, they make so much money that that's peanuts. It's not a lot. Could have made it much higher, but I'm nice. I'm in a good mood today. We charge Mexico $100,000 for every person. You'll see that it'll start to stop because that starts to add up. It starts to add up.
Well, today on Radio Times, what to make of Trump's candidacy? Is he hurting his Republican Party? Can the Republicans ignore him? And why is he doing so well in the polls, at least so far? We have two guests who have joined us. Alan Novak is an attorney, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. Alan, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning. It's great to be back with you, Mark.
Nice to have you back. And also with us is Charlie Giroux. He's a Republican political consultant with Quantum Communications. And Charlie Giroux, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be with you, Marty, and with Alan.
Indeed. Alan, let me put this first question to you, but Charlie, I'd like to hear from you as well. Is Trump hurting your party, Alan Novak?
You know, I think there are people that are trying to make that the story. Look, Donald Trump's brand is Donald Trump. And he's sucking all the oxygen out of the room right now with the attention because he's a showman and a pitchman, and he's not talking like a politician. So he's tapped into a populist base, which I'm going to submit cuts across party lines. Now, that being said, I think it's up to the Republican candidates to distinguish themselves and not let Donald Trump define either our party or them.
Are you saying, Alan, there are Democrats who like Donald Trump if he cuts across party lines?
You know, when what Donald Trump is doing, and I've talked to some Democrats that have said, look, he's not being politically correct in the things he says. And, you know, when we sit around in our living rooms or our kitchen tables or with our friends at a bar, we sometimes think and say things that aren't politically correct because I think that's the way people are. And I think there's some things he's saying that are outrageous. There's some things he's tapping into which are real honest feelings that people have in a populist vein. I mean, I think he's a fighter. And I think people want a fighter. I'm not saying he should be president of the United States, and I wouldn't support him. But he has that image of I'm a fighter, I'm a doer, I can fix the economy because I'm a billionaire, I don't owe anybody. You know, with the bluster right now, particularly where we are in silly season, that makes good copy. That's why you're talking about him today, and that's why people are paying attention to him, because he's saying things that don't sound like what a politician says.
Charlie Giroux, is this the silly season? And what do you make of Donald Trump's candidacy?
Well, it is the silly season, no question about that. And frankly, I'm not sure I could improve on Alan's answer because he pretty well covered the bases there. I mean, look, you've got a reality show mogul who understands that getting attention is what it's really all about. And he clearly has tapped into some anger. People are worried about their jobs. They're worried about their economic future. Some are worried about crime. And he's tapped into that. But he's done it in a way that belies what he said himself just a couple of years ago. I mean, the things that he's saying today, he excoriated Mitt Romney for going nowhere near just 4 years ago. I mean, he said that he was mean-spirited, that he had given up on the Latino vote, that he had given up on the Asian vote, that he had crucified all those who, quote-unquote, were inspired to come into this country. Those were his very words just 4 years ago. So you've got to take him, I think, with a grain of salt. And conversely, Marty, I think you've got to look at the Democratic side, where they've got their own set of embarrassments. They've got an avowed socialist who's running to the top of their polls, who says we ought to have a 90% top rate on taxes. I mean, how many people think that's a really good idea?
Well, apparently, at least so far, a number of Democrats think that is a good idea. And I should add that we did talk.
Precisely. We ought to talk about Bernie Sanders.
Well, in fact, we spent a whole hour last week talking about Bernie Sanders. So equal time here on Radio Times. But to you, Charlie Giroux, what do you make of the people that seem to believe what he says? And I'm actually looking at PolitiFact. They did an analysis of the various things that he has said and found that much of what he says is untrue. And yet we heard from that clip that I played, these enthusiastic audiences that like what they hear.
Well, much of it is untrue, unfortunately, Marty, and that's one of the sad realities here. I've heard an awful lot of things over the course of the past few months about immigration, but as I say, he has tapped into an anger. I don't know that it's specifically about immigration, but I think immigration kind of wraps into job security, economic future security. People are worried about where their future lies, and they see immigrants as a threat to them. I mean, they don't seem to be bothered too much by the fact that Donald Trump himself has employed illegal immigrants, not only on the project in D.C. that he's now trying to pass off on general contractors and subcontractors rather than on himself, but going back 30 years when he built Trump Tower in New York, there were lawsuits all over the place about his employment of illegal immigrants then. So, I mean, his whole shtick right now really doesn't add up, but unfortunately it has tapped into a vein of real concern across party lines. Alan Novak is right about that.
Well, and to you, Alan Novak, I'm even thinking of Herman Cain, who ran for the presidency or the Republican nomination for president. It seemed that in hindsight he was basically trying to sell books while running for office. Is there something about the Republican Party that attracts these kinds of people?
I wouldn't limit it to the Republican Party. I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to end up president of the United States, but this is going to be a good run for Bernie Sanders. He's enjoying probably the greatest national run that he's ever experienced. And I'm sure there'll be a book deal for him. It's nothing new for people to run for president to remain relevant or to advance themselves. I mean, it's not necessarily the idealistic way, but people aren't idealistic. People do things either for a higher purpose or their own purpose. And sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. But look, I think what Donald Trump is tapping into is a feeling that the federal government is incompetent, that the rules that the federal government plays by are not the same rules we have to play by. I think people can envision a Donald Trump standing toe-to-toe with a Vladimir Putin and, frankly, can envision Barack Obama doing that. Now, I'm not saying that's the basis that you vote for somebody for president, but I'm saying that's what he is tapping into right now. He is tough. He is a fighter. He's a pitchman and a showman in a country that is increasingly less serious and a country that is more showbiz-oriented.
Well, Republican Chairman Reince Priebus apparently talked to Trump last week. They had a phone conversation, and according to, I guess, Priebus and the people in the room, he told Trump to tone it down. Trump's description of this conversation, Alan, is that it was a congratulatory call for doing so well. He's one or two in the polls, depending on which polls you read. Is the Republican Party, though, do you think the leaders are afraid of him, afraid to criticize him publicly?
Well, here's the thing, and look, I'm going to be completely, fully disclosed here that a lot of
that's
my—
That's why you're on the show, Alan. You should know that, but yes, go ahead.
Aligns with the kind of things that Peggy Noonan has just written this past weekend. I mean, my inner Peggy Noonan is coming out in our conversation, but look, she had a great analogy. Donald Trump is going to have an impact on this thing the way he's doing now because he is good copy and reporters are flocking to him and then going to everybody else to get a reaction. Look, imagine him on a debate stage. Mm-hmm. And this is Peggy Noonan's analogy. He's like debating with a squid. You take him on, you're going to get ink all over you. That's the impact he's going to have, at least for the next few weeks.
But it's interesting, Lindsey Graham, for one, Charlie Giroux has been pretty critical of Trump. So it seems that certainly people he's going to be running against or is running against, at least some of them are stepping up.
Yes, some are, and I think others will as time goes on. And I think Alan's point that he made originally and that I've made subsequently is really at the heart of this. This is a showman. This is a person who has made, you know, his fame and fortune over the course of the past number of years as a reality show pitch man, and has become a mogul over that. It's hurting his business now, by the way, as you know, Marty. But in a crowded field, the kinds of things he's saying are going to get attention. That's going to propel you forward temporarily. I think that's the key word. There's that great scene from the movie An American President where Michael Douglas finally says, you know, it's time for serious talk and serious people, and I forget his opponent's name, your 15 minutes of fame are over. Mm. That point's going to come in this campaign. I think it's going to come relatively quickly, and some of this sideshow stuff will melt to the side.
Well, and according to Trump, he will release his, I guess, financial papers, whatever they're called, this week. And this is, I guess, to get on that stage on that first debate. What, Charlie Giroux, will you be looking for in these financial papers, if anything?
I mean, I don't know that there's much to see because, generally speaking, they're broad stroke things rather than specific down to the dime accountings, as at least a couple of the candidates have done. I think it'll be interesting to see whether he is in fact worth the amount of money he says he's worth. The Forbes 500 list certainly doesn't seem to indicate that. Mm. But ultimately, I don't think that's really where the issue is. The debate stage will be important. And as Alan will tell you, 4 years ago, there was some concern that he'd be out there moderating one of the debates for the Republicans. He's going to be on the stage now, and he's going to be subject to the scrutiny that all the candidates are. And I think that serious people will get a refreshing look at Donald Trump and all the candidates when it comes time to be in Cleveland.
Alan, as we know, a number of pretty well-known businesses are either disassociating themselves from Donald Trump and his organization, if I can put it that way. Again, is that hurtful to the party? Because it seems the party is not dependent on these companies, but certainly has an alliance with a lot of business organizations.
No, I don't think it is at all. And I think that it could be hurtful to Donald Trump and the Trump brand, because I think first and last, Donald Trump is about Donald Trump. And I don't, you look at his history of supporting candidates, and he's somebody that supports whoever helps him or whoever he perceives as can be helpful to him. I don't think it's an impact at all to the Republican Party. He's a player on a Republican stage right now, but he's a bigger player on the national stage. I can tell you, and I'm not going to name names because they're friends of ours, but I can tell you I've talked to union officials who have the same feeling he does about immigration.
They feel the same way they do about because of the jobs issue?
Yes, and or the fact that, you know, I'll submit that most union officials support immigration nominally if they can envision signing up people to become union members. If they can't, then they don't, because they see it as competition.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Alan Novak. He's an attorney here in Pennsylvania, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. Also with us is Charlie Giroux. He's a Republican political consultant with Quantum Communications, also in Pennsylvania. And we are talking about Donald Trump in this hour of Radio Times. And we want to hear from the Republicans in our audience. Is this someone you would like to see as president of the United States? Is he a problem for the Republican Party? 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. I see calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We're talking about Donald Trump, and we want to hear from the Republicans in our audience. Charlie Giroux, let me ask you, though, about some of his, I would say, incendiary and frankly incorrect comments about immigrants and rapists and the criminal element. A number of organizations have looked at the impact of illegal immigration on crime, and apparently immigrants are less likely to be criminals than the native-born. Immigrants are less likely than a native-born to be behind bars. Immigrants are less likely than a native-born to engage in criminal behavior. That's from the criminalization of immigration in the United States. How much, though, do you think that Donald Trump's comments hurt the Republican Party trying to appeal to Latino voters, now the largest minority group in the country?
I think that the point that Alan made a few minutes ago is correct. He doesn't hurt the Republican Party. He hurts himself. And if he were the nominee of the Republican Party saying those things, it might hurt the party. But Donald Trump speaks for himself. He doesn't speak for the Republican Party at this point. And I think it's up to other candidates to come to the plate and to make the countervailing point about immigration, immigration policy, our neighbors to the south, et cetera. And in the interest of full disclosure here, Marty, I will tell you that not only am I a Latino, I am an immigrant. I held a green card. I am an American by choice, a naturalized citizen, et cetera. So, you know, some of the comments that are made are particularly hurtful to me personally. Mm. But I don't think that they are reflective of the party at all. And in point of fact, they're reflective only of one man and of one man's most recent incarnation. Because as both Alan and I have said this morning, Donald Trump was singing a very different song just a couple of years ago, saying that the Democrats don't have a plan for illegal immigration, which they don't. But he said what they do have going for them, quote unquote, is that they're not mean-spirited about it.
But Charlie, I wonder
where he is today on that.
As you said, these opinions reflect on Donald Trump himself. But if 20% of Republicans, if again going back to the polls, if a sizable, at least so far, number of Republicans find that an attractive and appealing idea, what does it say about at least this faction of the Republican Party?
Well, it's this faction of America, Marty, because as Alan said and as I've repeated, this isn't limited to Republicans. Donald Trump is still flirting with the idea about running as a third-party candidate because he believes there are a significant number of Democrats, and there are, who feel that way as well. This isn't limited to the Republican Party by any stretch of the imagination. There are many, unfortunately, rank-and-file Democrats who feel the same way.
Charlie, we're going to call you back only because your phone line is a little sketchy and I don't want to lose you while we're talking, having this conversation. So let us hang up on you and then we will call you right back. Alan, anything you want to say? And then I do want to read some comments that we've been getting here at Radio Times.
Sure, sure. I agree with a lot of what Charlie said. I'd like to make the point. I think the opportunity on immigration, I think Jeb Bush, personally, Jeb Bush's position on immigration aligns completely with where I am. As a business person and as a Republican, I think that people like Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio have an opportunity to distinguish and define themselves, and they have, and they should continue to do even more boldly. My biggest frustration with the immigration issue is it uses a cutting edge issue. I don't think it's a zero-sum game issue. I think you can have border security. I think you can have documentation. I think you can have people here because they want to work here and improve their lives, and you can have a path to legalization. You can have all of that. It's not a zero-sum game, and I think that's what people like Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio are trying to say.
Well, and interesting, I'm looking at some research from the Pew Research Center saying that the number of Mexicans coming illegally into this country has really dropped in recent years. So this, I guess, this image that he creates of people coming over the border in order to commit crimes in the United States. I mean, last summer we saw mostly women and children escaping civil war, escaping rapists and criminal element in Central American countries coming through Mexico to the United States.
And, you know, and I do a lot of work in the agricultural sector and a lot of work specifically in the dairy sector. And, you know, immigrant workers are a vital part of the operation team, the workforce team of any major agricultural organization and dairy farm, including those in Pennsylvania.
Let me play another clip, and we're going back to this speech that Donald Trump gave on Saturday in Phoenix, Arizona. Here he is addressing Jeb Bush's potential presidency and what would happen if the option came up to build a Ford plant either in the United States or in Mexico. Let's listen.
So let's say Jeb Bush is president. He knows it's no good to have a $2.5 billion plant built right near our country. Well, how does it help us, right? So here's what happens. He knows it's no good. He'll have a little pressure. Don't let the plant be built. And he might even say, don't let the plant be built. Might even call the head of Ford. The plant's not going to be built. And then the next day, he'll be called by special interests that supported him, his lobbyists who push him around, like a piece of candy, or his donors who have stock in Ford. And they'll say, you can't do that. I helped you. You can't hurt them. You just can't do it. He folds in about 2 seconds.
So, Charlie Giroux, what do you make of that?
I'm not sure, quite frankly, what he's talking about.
let me just say, it was a hard speech for us to edit because, as I said, there was no script and he jumped from one issue to the other. No, go ahead, Charlie.
He does. But, I mean, the point is that the notion of border security, which I think everybody agrees with, is not incompatible with realistic immigration policy and a pathway to citizenship for the 11, 12, 13, 15, however many you want to determine it is, quote-unquote, illegal immigrants in this country, many of whom, it's important to point out, Marty, came here legally and came here for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to work, to make their lives better, and to come here and be a part of the American dream, which is why we all came here at some point or another.
What do you make of those comments? And Alan, since he brought up the name of Jeb Bush, how do you see him in comparison to Donald Trump?
Well, measured. Donald Trump is going to make every Republican look measured. But I don't know that that's what people want, at least in this stage of a campaign. Again, we're into the attention-grabbing stage of the campaign. I've analogized this to we had the early entry of the executives on the Republican side, former governors, then some of the up-and-coming policy folks when senators started announcing they're getting in. Or we had the policy people first, then the executives. Now we have the large personalities. You know, Donald Trump, of course, poor Chris Christie gets, like, overwhelmed with Trumpness, you know, around the same time that he announced, because nobody can have a bigger personality than Donald Trump. I think what he was saying in that comment is, look, I won't be owned by anybody. I'll be under nobody's thumb because I'm a billionaire, so I don't have to answer to anybody. Now, there's an attractiveness to that if you turn the coin to the other side. And you know, he's like, I can stand toe-to-toe with anybody and nobody pulls my strings. That's what he's trying to say with that comment.
Well, let me go with something that Peter, I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Peter Winner wrote in, I think it was the New York Times. He was former deputy to Karl Rove when Karl Rove worked in the Bush White House. And Peter Winner says, for starters, Trump, though he claims to be a conservative, is nothing of the sort. He's barely even a Republican. For most of the last decade, he was a registered Democrat. It wasn't that long ago that most of his political contributions went to Democrats, including Harry Reid, Chuck Schumer, and Hillary Clinton. Before he discovered his Republican roots, Mr. Trump favored a single-payer health care system, proposed a large net worth tax on wealthy individuals. He once declared himself strongly pro-choice and favored drug legalization. And Charlie Giroux, he goes on from there. This is something that you were saying earlier, that he is really, he's not a conservative and he's, I guess, barely a Republican.
Well, I think that's fair to say. I mean, if you look at Donald Trump's record on public policy issues through the years, he's been all over the place. And, you know, that's why I say to, you know, now say, does he speak for the Republican Party? I think the answer is a resounding no. And I think that as things shake out and as the more, what was the word Alan chose, moderated voices or measured voices come to the fore, the serious people who have serious answers to the public policy issues confronting our country, because the one thing that Donald Trump hasn't come up with are specific solutions to the immigration situation. To say let's build a fence is all well and good. Is he going to build a 14,000-mile fence? Because that's how many miles of border we have in the United States. And we've already started, you know, large portions of the southern border, which I assume is what he's referring to with the fence. It simply hasn't worked. And we have over 10 million illegal immigrants in this country right now. What are we going to do with them and about them? That's the thing that he doesn't want to answer and doesn't want to come up with even the first conversation about, because, quite bluntly, the demagoguery works much better right now in terms of getting the attention that Alan said candidates need to do right now.
Alan, I scribbled down the word Bernie Sanders because, you know, like him or not like him, at least he's consistent. I mean, you know, just reading that section from Peter Winner where he talks about Donald Trump being on both sides of all these hot button issues. You can't say that about Bernie Sanders, whether you like him or not.
No, I mean, he's an avowed socialist and he advocates policies that kind of go along that socialist theory in vain. And he's consistent about that. To the extent, he's probably more authentic than Donald Trump. Unfortunately, Donald Trump looks more authentic because he's, quote, real, whatever that means in today's lexicon. But I think Bernie Sanders.
And Bernie Sanders is consistent. He's just wrong consistently.
But he's authentic about it.
Well, I mean, there's something.
He's as authentic as they come. There's no pretense to Bernie Sanders.
Well, let me get Rick from, looks like Hocasson, Delaware, to join us. Hi, Rick. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Very, very interesting. I just wanted to comment that if you look back on Romney, he did not win the election because he got a low turnout. He said some things against Hispanics, and that has tagged to us that we are anti-Hispanic to some degree, whether we like it or not. And now you have this demagogue on who could be talking about the Japanese 80 years ago, the same type of demagoguery. And so Republicans will suffer because of this, no matter who is the candidate. And the Democrats are laughing their way to the voting booth.
Sure, Rick. No, I appreciate the call. Let me just, not the greatest phone line. Rick says he's a Republican. He is continuing, he meaning Trump, is continuing the stigma about Republicans being anti-Hispanic. Charlie, what he's saying is that it reflects poorly on his party, the Republican Party.
Well, do the candidacies of Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and others reflect that same vein? No, they do not. And, you know, Marco Rubio is one of the rising stars of the Republican Party. And I can tell you that there are a significant number of Latinos who are staunchly Republican and are going to be forceful voices in the 2016 campaign. And I think ultimately those voices of reason are going to drown out the voices of intemperance.
Let me get Donna from, looks like Cherry Hill, to join us. Hi, Donna. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Just wanted to be the first to mention on the radio that comparing Donald Trump with Bernie Sanders is, a crazy comparison. Bernie Sanders speaks about real issues. Donald Trump does not. So I just wanted to say this is not even, not even a real comparison.
Okay, fair. With something we touched earlier, anything you want to add to that, Charlie?
Well, I think the comparison was that Bernie Sanders is way out of the mainstream. Maybe he's not the Democratic Party. I don't know. But his socialist views, I don't think, are embraced by too many Americans. Perhaps some in the Democratic primary electorate will for a short term. But I think that was the comparison that was being made, not that Donald Trump was as real or whatever as Bernie Sanders.
Well, I don't want to get off on a tangent here. As I said, we talked about Bernie Sanders last week. But he is talking about things like income inequality, the feeling that the middle class is really being hurt. And Alan, while Donald Trump may touch on those things, he doesn't really in any way talk about what he would do about it, except essentially kind of boss people around and make them do what he wants them to do.
Yeah, and I agree with what Charlie just said. But look, I think the comparison is they both are tapping into populist veins within the bases. And I don't even like to say within the bases of both parties, because I think populism cuts across party lines. It just expresses itself on different issues within the party bases. It was a very interesting, the Monmouth poll that was cited prior to our coming on the air. The one thing that struck me about that poll and the lack of confidence people have in the federal government is it cut across party lines. There were reasons liberals didn't like what the government was doing. It wasn't solving problems with the human safety net, et cetera. There were reasons conservatives didn't like the federal government because it's too overreaching and it's not dealing with moral issues of the day. So I think there's a populist undercurrent that cuts across party lines that people are unhappy. And I think Sanders is touching it in his way on the liberal side, and Donald Trump is touching it his way on kind of a populist across-the-board side.
But what you hear, Charlie, is when Donald Trump criticizes leaders, really on both sides of the party, he calls them stupid and incompetent and frankly, says insulting things about them.
He does. And, you know, as I say, when he is put under the scrutiny that all the candidates are going to be, we'll see whether those words match up with his own record and his own rhetoric. I mean, he's got a lot of splaining to do over his past support, not only of political candidates, but some of his business dealings as well. And as I say, you know, his own employment of illegal immigrants suggests something about his core values.
But do you think that the party leaders, Charlie, have done enough to repudiate him?
I don't think it's up to the party leaders to repudiate him at this point, Marty. I really don't. I'll let Alan speak to that. He's a former state chairman. But I think it's really important that the party leadership allow all of the candidates to fully express themselves, express their views, and let the cream rise to the top. I mean, once the party has a nominee, it's up to the party leadership to make sure that the nominee says the right things. But I think until we get a lot closer to determining who the ultimate standard bearer of the party is going to be, it's important to let the candidates just speak their minds and let the voters react.
Is that the way you see it, Alan? Yeah, go ahead.
I couldn't have said it better than Charlie just said it. I agree with him 100% on that. I think this is opportunity for candidates to distinguish themselves. And frankly, when you don't have a president, or within a state, when you don't have a sitting governor of your party, I don't know how effective a party leader is anyway. I think always the standard bearer for a party is the highest elected member of that party in an executive branch, president for the country and governor for a state.
So then who speaks for the, who would be that person for the Republican Party?
Well, I don't think one person does. I think you look at a Big Ten. I'm a Big Ten person. I think that you've got a wide array of candidates in this field running for president, and it's going to get wider with Governor Walker and probably Governor Kasich. There's quite a lot of talent in the Republican talent pool for president, and I think that's the best way to look at a party, through all the prisms of the people that represent that party.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Alan Novak is with us. He's an attorney, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. Also with us is Charlie Giroux. He's a Republican political consultant with Quantum Communications. We're going to take a very short break, and again, looking for the Republicans in our audience to talk about Donald Trump's candidacy for the White House, for the Republican nomination for the White House. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with some GOP party leaders and elders, if I can say that, about Donald Trump's presidential bid. And again, Alan Novak, a former chair of the Pennsylvania Republican Party, is with us, along with Charlie Giroux. He's a Republican political consultant. And joining us now is Congressman Charlie Dent. He represents Pennsylvania's 15th Congressional District. And Congressman Dent, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be with you this morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'll put the question to you that I put to our other guests. Is Donald Trump hurting your party?
Is Donald Trump hurting the party?
Yeah.
Well, my answer is this. I think that Donald Trump's comments are inflammatory and incendiary, certainly offensive to a lot of Americans. You know, the stereotyping is really totally uncalled for. At the end of the day, is he causing short-term damage? My quick answer would be yes. But at the end of this process, the Republican Party in the presidential election will be defined by the Republican presidential nominee, and I don't believe that will be the Donald. It will be somebody else. I don't believe that that his campaign is a serious attempt to win the presidency. It is a serious effort, however, or a serious exercise in self-promotion.
Mm, indeed.
And to a certain extent, it's kind of like, you know, almost at times I kind of feel like it's, you know, he thinks it's a form of entertainment. But this is serious business, and at the end of the day, I just don't see him becoming a nominee or anything close to the nominee. He'll flame out fairly at some point. I don't know when. But, you know, he can cause some problems in the meantime.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, whether you think some of the short-term damages you describe it can be contained, or whether it will last and again, hurt the party going forward.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could ask the same question about this Bernie Sanders hurt, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, whoever their eventual nominee is. I don't think many people believe Bernie Sanders will be the Democratic nominee for president, but, you know, can he do enough damage to Secretary Clinton by dragging her over to the left? You know, she seems to be trying to move closer to his positions than the other way around. And so I see that problem for on the Democratic side. And Republican side, I don't see any of the, I'll say, the top-tier Republican candidates, you know, moving toward the direction of Donald Trump in terms of that type of rhetoric, or even on the policy. I think most serious Republican candidates on an issue like immigration know that the system is broken and know that there needs to be serious repairs to the system. I mean, everybody understands that, and that we're going to have to confront this issue and not just throw, you know, rhetorical explosives out there that really don't solve the problem.
Well, it's clear Bernie Sanders disagrees with Hillary Clinton, but he doesn't insult her, frankly, the way.
Well, that's why I don't think Bernie Sanders I don't believe Bernie Sanders at the end of the day is a serious candidate for president. If he were a serious candidate for president, he'd be lighting up Secretary Clinton right now on her server, on all sorts of issues that would show that he's serious. This is when you're running for a presidency, you're running for a political office. This is a contact sport, and you need to draw a hard contrast. And just simply talking about his view of the world, which is rather kind of a statist approach to solving our problems, is going to get him some applause and some enthusiasm from the hardcore base of the Democratic Party. But when it comes to drawing a contrast, you know, he's going to have to light her up. And I don't see that happening. If he's going to light her up, and you know, then I might change my opinion about his candidacy. But until that time, you know, he's trying to make more of a point than anything else.
Well, so you think servers are more important than foreign policy or domestic policy? Or
I think it's an issue of trust. I mean, I think there's a lot of things being said. I mean, foreign policy is a big issue, but I'm just saying if I'm running against her, if I'm her opponent, I would certainly raise the issue that issue of the server. I think it's a fair issue. That you know, all the State Department employees are supposed to operate on the .gov work site email address, and she was not, and it's pretty clear that there's a complete and total lack of transparency there, and frankly, lack of candor, and I might even say lack of honesty about the whole thing, and I think it's a ripe issue, and I would think that there are other issues like that. I mean, if he wants to draw a contrast, he should draw a contrast. If he's trying to win, if he's trying to make a point, well then he can talk high-minded on all the policy points.
Well, let me get to Alan Novak and Charlie Giroux back in on the conversation. I wonder, as you look at Pennsylvania, all three of you, and we should say that Scott Walker is announcing his candidacy today, or I guess already has online. I think he's number 15. It's interesting. Everyone wants to be Republican president of the United States. But, Alan, as you look at these 15 candidates, is there someone that you think is best for Pennsylvania? Or is it too soon to tell?
I think it's too soon to tell. We've had a hard time carrying the state for a Republican candidate for president. I think last time we did it was George Herbert Walker Bush in '88. Came pretty close on the George W. Bush reelect. But I think governors, particularly Jeb Bush and John Kasich, when he gets in, are going to run well in Pennsylvania. Marco Rubio, if he's a candidate by the time we get to a Pennsylvania primary, would be very interesting as well. So I think Carly Fiorina, if she's still around when we get to a Pennsylvania primary, or she were to be our nominee, would be very, very interesting in Pennsylvania. But I think those are the kind of candidates that would run well in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Look, the gold standard in Pennsylvania was Governor Tom Ridge. I think he was the right kind of Republican profile to be very successful and popular, both as a candidate and a governor in Pennsylvania. And I think so that kind of affects my focus and my prism when I evaluate our candidates.
How about for you, Charlie Giroux?
Well, first of all, I just want to say if Congressman Dent wasn't listening into the show prior to coming on, he echoed pretty much exactly what Alan and I have been saying all morning, which I think speaks loudly to the basic premise of your program this morning, Marty. But for me, in the interest of full disclosure, I am a national co-chairman for Carly Fiorina. I think she, as a business person with really broad appeal, and someone who has proven her mettle not only in business but also in the political arena in this campaign. She stacks up as very good for Pennsylvania, as very good for the Northeast, where Republicans have had a difficult time in presidential races over the past number of years. And I will tell you this. Carly Fiorina is the one Republican Hillary Clinton hopes she never has to face.
Even though she's got some baggage from her time as a CEO?
I don't think she has baggage from her time as CEO. She lost a boardroom brawl, as she characterizes it, and I don't think that's baggage at all. I think that she can carry very proudly her record at HP.
Because we have three people on the phone, we can't take phone calls, but let me read some comments that I see here. This is an email from Gary, and Congressman Dan, I'll put this to you. He says, I'm a registered Republican, and I look at Donald Trump with disbelief. Amazing that no one calls Donald Trump for what he is, a demagogue. That is, according to Webster's Dictionary, a leader who makes use of popular prejudices and false claims and promises in order to gain power. I look at the likes of Cruz and Trump and realize that maybe I should be an independent. I don't think I'm alone. Is that worrisome to you, Congressman?
Well, yes, it does concern me, but I don't think the party should be defined by either Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. I mean, I think Charlie Giroux and Alan Novak have stated it pretty well. I think you got a list of very serious Republican candidates for president, who talk in measured tones and are by and large pretty careful, but people like John Kasich and Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorina, and Marco Rubio, Scott Walker, and I would even put Chris Christie in there. I might put Chris Christie and Carly in the second tier of the really serious candidates, but who might break through. But we have some very serious candidates who. That listener, I would just let him know that there are very serious people who have thoughtful approaches to public policy, and one of them will be our nominee.
We have Ahmed. I have to read it. He's calling in from Wilmington, Delaware. He says the guests aren't denouncing Donald Trump. They're distancing themselves, but not rejecting what he's saying as a racist or as inaccurate. I think more Republican leaders should be doing this. Do you agree with that, Congressman?
Well, I thought I stated pretty clearly. I think he's a self-promoter. I think demagogue is a fair term. And he's pandering to nativist elements, which I completely disagree with what he has done or what he's doing, and I don't like the way he's going about it. It's fair to talk about immigration. It's an important issue. We should talk about the broken system, but we should talk about it in a way that's respectful. And one that doesn't stereotype people. So I'm not sure what this individual would like me to do other than set myself on fire.
And Marty, just for the record, demagogue is
ahead,
a word that I used earlier in the program.
Okay.
I say demagogue is a word that I used earlier in the program to describe the approach that Donald Trump is taking.
Let me read a quote, and this was something that Rick Perry said at the National Press Club. Didn't get a lot of attention. I thought it was interesting, though. He says, for too long, we Republicans have been content to lose the black vote because we found we didn't need it. But when we gave up trying to win the support of African Americans, we lost our moral legitimacy as the party of Lincoln, as the party of equal opportunity for all. To you, Alan Novak, does that in any way reflect your thinking?
Yeah, I think that we should compete for votes from all people, and we should not be colorblind or categorize people by race or ethnicity. I think we should compete on our principles and our policy goals, and we should compete in all communities with all people.
How about for you, Congressman?
Yeah, I guess my answer is one of the problems that the Republican Party has faced with some communities is that we don't show up enough. That I tell all my friends who are running for office, make sure you get out there in every community. Give them, talk about your message. Showing up is a big part of this. And I think at times, many you might find in the Latino community or the African-American community, they might not think we care. And that's something that we have to work on. We have to show them that we are interested, and just by being there, talking to them, engaging with them on whatever the issue may be, the Voting Rights Act, immigration, engage and talk about these issues and meet with them. And I guarantee you we will do better because many of our core principles and philosophies do resonate with many people in these communities, whether African-American or Hispanic community. They do resonate, and we have to make that case stronger, but we have to do it. But we have to show up and show that we're interested and that we really care.
Why haven't, to use your words, Congressman, why haven't Republicans shown up for these conversations?
No, I think you stated it well that in a lot of districts, you know, they can rely more on a base vote, to carry the day in both the primary and the general election. I don't happen to come from a district like that where I actually have to, reach out to people, and not just Republicans, but Republicans and independents and Democrats. I can't take anybody, I can't take anything for granted or any constituency for granted. I have to go out there and work for all of them. And I found that in my own community. We have a very strong South Asian community, Indian community, and it's growing. And I spent a lot of time going to Diwali festivals and engaging at the Hindu temple and meeting with people. It's important. And I think that, I find that when I engage these communities, that we have one heck of a lot more in common, politically than many would think.
We have an email from George. He says, your guests repeatedly claim that rank-and-file Democrats agree with Trump. I think that was you, Alan Novak. Please ask him, what is your evidence for this? I don't believe it's true. This is from George sending us an email.
I've sat in rooms with people that say the same kind of things that Donald Trump says. That doesn't make them right, but I think there's a stereotype that he taps into that's wrong, that people hold. And I don't think that stereotype is limited to a Republican or Democrat or party affiliation. There are people that think that way because they're not informed.
I do want to play one more little clip here. And this is a little side comment that Donald Trump made at his speech on Saturday in Phoenix, Arizona. A side comment, but I thought an interesting one. Let's give it a listen.
I always want to be loved, Like when I went on dates, if a woman dropped me, which happened often, I would always like to say, or at least in my own mind, that I dropped her. Does that make sense? Makes me feel better.
So, Congresswoman, how revealing was that comment? Well, you can rewrite history when people break up with you.
I don't know. I'm not sure what that has to do with anything, to be honest with you. But to Alan Novak's point, I agree that this, the appeal of Donald Trump is not simply to Republicans. I mean, he's making very hard arguments against trade agreements. I mean, that's a very common refrain from much of the base of the Democratic Party. That kind of naked protectionism, economic isolationism. That is a very hard driving point for many, base Democrats. I mean, I just went through a trade debate. I watched this. I'll tell you, I think Alan's point is actually absolutely spot on. Now, with Donald Trump's point there about breaking up with his girlfriends or getting broke, whose fault is it? Well,
yeah.
I can't. I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't analyze that one.
Well, fair enough. About a minute before I have to say goodbye. And to you, Alan Novak, as the former chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party, does it concern you that Donald Trump could do what Ross Perot did in 92, run as an independent and take away votes from Republican voters?
It does. The candidate does. And I think that's why Ryan Priebus is being very measured in his comments. Because at the end of the day, Donald Trump is somebody running for president who has nothing to lose. At the end of the day, when he's not president, he's still Donald Trump. He's still the Trump brand. And that, to me, is the reason that some people are being measured about him. I think the really artful and tactical thing for candidates like Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Carly Fiorina, Scott Walker, et cetera, to do is to distinguish themselves in hard points that make them look so much more attractive and measured and so much more like leaders than Donald Trump.
Well, we have to end on that note. My thanks to you, Alan Novak, for joining us on Radio Times.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. And it's great to be on with Charlie Giroux and Charlie Dent. my favorite people.
The two Charlies. Alan Novak, attorney, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. Charlie Giroux, thank you very much for joining us as well.
My pleasure. Great to be on with you and with Alan Novak and Congressman Dent.
But a little love fest here. Republican political consultant with Quantum Communications and Congressman Charlie Dent, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me on, my good friends, Charlie and Al. Charlie and Alan. It's great being on with both of them. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And he's a Pennsylvania congressman, a Republican representing the 5th Congressional District. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the program. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.